Shalom everyone, we are in Parashat Chayei Sara, a very powerful, important, impressive parasha about topics that everybody really needs to give some time to it every day. Okay, so let's start with the parasha. The parasha, we start reading it in the Torah, chapter 23 in Genesis, verse 1, and it says, "And the life of Sarah, ויחיה שרה 100 שנה ו20 שנה ו7 שנים שני חיי שרה." In the life of Sarah were 100 year, 20 year and 7 years. The שני חיי שרה, we'll come to it. It's a story about the death of Sarah, although the name of the parasha is her life. Very important in order to understand who are we, what we're doing over here. So then, verse 2, and Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, which is Hebron, the land of Canaan, and then Abraham wants to bury her. There's a whole story how he purchases the land and the cave in which he buried her. I don't know if you know, but in the land of Israel, for many, many, it's a small country, burying in cemeteries is very unproductive because very shortly there's no place to live. So people buried in caves. Even today, they just inaugurated in Jerusalem a big burial cave for 34,000 graves. In Jerusalem, it's like there's no way. You have to go back to the ancient times. So that's also the cave in which Sarah was buried, and later on Abraham, Isaac, and Rivka, Yaakov, and Jacob, and Leah. So there's a whole story, and why do we need to go through the whole story of the negotiation and the purchase and how much it cost? 400 silver shekel. So, but that's the first story, and then it speaks about the burial of Sarah. Okay, immediately after that, that's chapter 24, is another very important story, which is after the death of Sarah, Abraham feels responsible, and he's blessed, but one little problem, his son is not married. So he's sending his servant Eliezer to Haran, to where his family is living. Okay, he left them over there in Haran, in Turkey of today, a Kurdistan of Turkey, and to find a woman. And there's an amazing story about how Eliezer, the servant, is going to Haran and he's in awe. How am I going to find a wife to Yitzhak? You know, it's like, how would I know? I think usually the person has the problem with himself. How would I find my soulmate? So what he's doing, he goes to the water, you know, where everybody's coming to, and he says, he starts to pray. So, and he says to God, "Please, the God of my father Abraham, do me some grace and make me a miracle. The first lady that I will see, the first girl that I will see, and I'll ask her for water, and she will say, I'll give water for you and your camels. I know she's the one." He doesn't finish speaking. That's the words, verse 15, chapter 24. And Rivka is coming from in the Torah, and you know, the verse is saying that she was the one that was born to Betuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, the brother of Abraham. This is family, right? And she is coming with her jar on her back. And she's very good looking. Okay, she comes down to the water, and Eliezer runs to her, and he says, "You know, let's start with the first one. Okay, that's my first shot. Can you give me some water?" She says, "I'll give you water, and also for your camels." And she's running and giving the camels. They drink a lot after a long journey. Okay, and he's in shock. First shot. He got the lady. He's so much in shock. Just again, he asked her who she is. He asked her, and she says, and he realized that's, you know, touche, this is the right thing. He finds a soulmate. Wow. Remember, Isaac is 40 years old. 40 years old. Wow. You know, in most Jewish families, when you're single 40 years old, this is a disaster. Okay? How did that happen? Now, so we have two stories, if you notice. One story is purchasing a land and a place, which is a very, you know, how do I know it's the right thing? How do I know this is the place to settle? The second story is, how do I know who's my soulmate? Two very, very giant questions a person has to ask himself at least once a lifetime, right? If you miss it in the first time, then you have to do it second and third and fourth. God forbid. Okay, or that's the way. The story is not over. After the wedding, there's another story, chapter 25. Abraham is taking another wife. Her name is Keturah. Some say that's Hagar. Same woman, but different name. Okay, Rashi says so. Okay, she was in a better shape. He has few more sons from her, and he sends them, while Isaac is still alive, to the Far East to teach them spiritual teachings. Okay? Around that time, some spiritual teachers appear in the Far East, and they change everything about the Far East religions, and they were called Brahmins. Just add an A in the beginning, you get Abrahamins. Okay? Abraham's messengers. Okay, then Abram passes on, which is with amazing description that when he passes on, okay, he lived 100 years, 70 years, and 5 years. Same description. And then Abram expired, that's what he says, and he died, good old age, old and satiated. So they buried him, his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, in the cave of Machpelah. Okay, then there's a story about Ishmael. He dwells in the Arabian Peninsula, and he has sons and families, and finally becomes 12 presidents of Ishmael. We'll see if we have time to deal with it. Okay, so what is this parasha? What this parasha has to do with us? In order for us to understand that, we go to the Zohar, and the Zohar is a unique way to deal with today's parasha. The Zohar starts immediately with the story with Jonah, the prophet, the whole book, and how Jonah ran away from God, okay, because God told him, go to Nineveh, which is in the north Iraq of today, and it was a big city, very big city at that time, one of the biggest cities in the world. Tell them that if they're not going to repent, they're going to be burned down. They're going to be destroyed. I'm sorry. And Jonah doesn't want the job. So he heard that if you leave Israel, you lose the Holy Spirit, the spirit of prophecy. So he goes into Jaffa's port, gets a ship going to Tarshish. Some say it's Tunisia. Doesn't matter. And on the way, there's a big, big wave. And another wave, storm, and everybody prays, he goes to sleep. The captain wakes him up and says to him, Ben Adam, ma lecha nirdam, kum kra le'elohecha, which is the beginning of the prayer of Slichot, that are from the days before Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Slichot. He's not praying. So the captain asked him, why are you sleeping? Get up and pray to your God. And Jonah says, how could I pray to my God? I'm running away from him. You know what, guys? He wants to drown the ship because he wants me. Throw me to the sea and he let you go. He said, no way, how can we throw a person to the sea? You're going to drown. You know what? Says the Zohar, put me down into the water, see what happens. They put him down into the water, the sea is quiet. They bring him back into the ship, waves, huge waves. Finally, they let him go into the water. Then says the Zohar, like this. Verse 4 in the Zohar of Parashat Chayei Sarah. Keivan shenishlach el hayam parcha mimenu nishmato. Since he was thrown into the sea, His soul left him. Simply he died. He drowned. Altat kisei ha-melech v'nidon alefanav. His soul went up to the throne and was judged. V'uchzira lo hanshama. And his life was given to him again. But remember, at that time, the fish already swallowed him. So maybe he's alive, but in the fish. And then the fish died, and he repented. He's praying, God, I'll do whatever you want. From the depths, I'm praying to you. Really, the depths of the sea. And then what happens? The fish died, remember? So the fish, chazar adag letchia, the fish is resurrected. We have two resurrection in one sentence. And the fish takes him to the shore, spits him out, and he goes to Nineveh. You want to know what happened? Read the book. Okay? It's part of the Bible, the book of Jonah. Okay? So, tough. The fish, you know, Jonah died and he came back. He had a clinical death and came back. Then the fish died, the fish got back. You're pushing it, right? Kind of pushing it. But you have to understand something. The Zohar explains to us something very important that will be like the base of all what ideology, belief system is about. That you always have to remind yourself. What do you mean judgment? The Zohar says, we're being judged every time we go to sleep at night. Our soul leaves us, we're being judged, and we come back. That's why we say, in the morning as you wake up, Modeh ani lefanecha, thank you God for giving me another chance, another day. Right? Mm-hmm. I might as well stay up there. Not everybody goes to sleep, gets up in the morning. Right? You wake up in the morning, it means you are giving another chance. Don't take it lightly. So, v'adinu b'shnei drachim. Another Zohar said the judgment is in two ways. The person is never being judged about the evil stuff he's going to do in the future. Why? He didn't do it yet. How can we judge somebody for something he didn't do? However, sheken danim adam rak al hatov shekvar asa. So they judge the person only for the good he already did. Ela shemetivim adam al hatov shel ata kmo shamu danim oto al hazchuyot shehu atid la'asot shehu nitzal bishvilam af al pi shehu ata rasha. However, if the person is supposed to do good things, he didn't do it yet. He can be saved. That's called credit. Okay? Credit, what does it mean? It means that you're going to do good with others. And because of that, you're being judged according to the good you didn't do that. Why? Even though the person is evil and that in this moment, right now in the present, he's evil. But he's going to do good stuff. Okay? Give him credit. It's not a benefit of the doubt. Given the credit because he's going to do good, therefore, so you look at a person and you look at, you know, we don't do that. We look at the person, we think we know what we know, what we see, and then we start judging the person. And sometimes we, you know, look very foolish because we don't really know what's going on. And sometimes, yes, the person is not such a nice person, but later on, he does great things. So, it's like really risking, embarrassing yourself by judging other people. Okay? Now why? כמו שאמרו, now listen carefully. משום שהקדוש ברוך הוא עושה טוב עם כל הבריאות, because the Creator does good with all creatures. כל דבריו שעושה הוא רק להיטיב לכל. Everything he does is only for the purpose of doing good. Lehitiv. This is like, if we're talking about philosophy, theology, belief system, you name it, whatever you want. The hardest thing and the most important thing for most people is to remember to hold on to the notion, to that, I won't say beliefs, it's not a belief, it's beyond faith, to the knowing, to the consciousness, whatever is happening is for the good. We spoke a lot about it, but we have to go on speaking about it, because that can turn the whole story from evil to good, from unlucky to lucky. Because the moment, and as I said it many times, yes, the sages are talking about it, the Torah is talking about it again and again and again. Scientific experiment shows, if you're optimistic, which means you believe that everything is for the good, you're right. You live longer, you make more money, you'll be healthier, you'll have good, more good luck, good fortune in your life. But if you're pessimistic, you don't believe in that, you're also right. Your life is going to be much more miserable. You live less years, you're going to make less money, going to have less fortune, good luck in your life, because that state of mind is detrimental to success. What if I'm negative? You know what? 10% of the day, 30% of the day, okay? It's like you have 10%, 30% that you can upgrade, and you didn't. And whose fault is it that you didn't do it? Your fault only. Because you did not invest in the most important asset in your life, your consciousness. Because if your consciousness is really coming back again and again, that everything that the Creator is doing is for the good, just working on that, that has a very powerful thing. Think about Eliezer again, or Abram. He wants to buy the place. He wants to buy the real estate. He wants to buy this real estate for 38 years already. And he's waiting for the right moment. He doesn't want just to come to, I want this piece of product. Well, you're a holy person. Why you want this one? It must be really a very powerful one. No, we're not selling. So he's waiting till the wife dies. We read about it last week. Mm-hmm. He knows about the property 38 years earlier. Now his wife is dying. He's coming to them and he's saying, guys, I need a place to bury my wife. I need a cave. Do you have any kind of a cave nobody needs? So, just choose a cave. There's so many caves around it. This is Hebron. It's like there are many caves. And he says, Ephron, I saw, you know, where my tent is. Not far. There's a cave. It's yours, is it? So, yeah, it's mine. Take it. It's yours. Abram says, no, you can't just take it. I have to pay. You know, I'm not taking presents. But says, no, you can take it with the field. No, you want to pay. How much? Okay, they negotiate 400 shekels. A lot of money at that time. Silver shekels. Okay. We learn from that when you negotiate, says the Zohar, the more you are eager to buy the property and you show it to the owner, the higher the price, right? Mm-hmm. So you never jump it. And if you're very eager, he won't sell it to you. So you have to be really, as we learned last week, cool down your passion. I want it now on this property, no other property. No. Restraint of your desires and your passion will make your life much easier. Everybody knows that. Okay? But that's a nice idea for kindergarten. But we are reading the Zohar. There must be something deeper than that. So, the Zohar is starting with a question, with the story of the Jonah. What is this story? Why the Zohar has to bring me that story? And then the Zohar brings us another story, even weirder than that. Abram finally buys the the cave and the land. He brings Sarah to be buried. Remember from last week? She's not the first one to be buried over there. Adam and Eve are buried over there. So it says when he buries Sarah, Adam and Eve get up and they say, we destroyed, we messed up mankind. She just fixed what we missed. How can we be buried with her in the same place? We don't deserve it. And they leave the premises. Abram runs after them. Finally, Abram convinces Adam to go back and lie down in his cave. But Eve, she's not coming back. You know, I listened to the snake. I ate the fruit. You know, I messed up so much. I convinced my husband. I don't know. I can't be buried next to that woman. What she did was so gorgeous. Abram comes back to the cave. He says, Sarah, look, I can't convince her. You know, you talk to her. You know, woman to woman. So Sarah, she was just buried. She gets up. She goes outside. She's convincing Eve to go back and lie down. What a story. Huh? You like the story? Okay, another story. There's a story. I'm telling this story every time because it's like an endless story. Years later, the time of, there's a Mishkan in Shiloh. We're talking about some 31 centuries ago. A bit less. Samuel the prophet is just very young. Okay? And the Philistines are attacking their dwellings. They live. They invaded from the coast. So their cities are on the coast. But they're starting to invade the mountain area where the Israelites are living, where the tribes of Israel are. Judah and Benjamin and so on. Then most of them already ran to the north because of the Philistines. So there's a big battle. And the Israelites are not so spiritual, and the sons of Eli, the high priest, are not behaving so nice. And they take the Ark of the Covenant to the battlefield, and they lose. And the Ark is being taken captive by the Philistines. The Philistines suffer big, big, big disasters, and they realize it's because of the Ark. Let us check. Maybe it's just by coincidence, maybe. How would you check? How would you check it's normal or abnormal? Let's do an abnormal test. Let's tie two calves to the gates of the city. And let's harness the two mothers, cows, to a wagon. We put the ark on a wagon. If whatever happened was just natural, the cows will go naturally to their calves. But if this is the hand of God, the cows will take the ark back to the Israelites. And the cows take the ark to Beit Shemesh, the city of Beit Shemesh. And it says the city of Beit Shemesh, people are just working in the field and suddenly they raise their eyes and they hear a song. The cows are singing. Vaisharna haparot. What are they singing? Shir chadash. Mizmor shiru l'Hashem shir chadash. It's a psalm. It's a psalm, sing to God a new song. Why new song? Cows singing, that's a new song. That's new. Cows never sang. And never sang a psalm. Okay? Would you believe that? No. Who could believe that? Of course, the Philistines go back home. The ark is being taken back. And the cows are being sacrificed to God. Okay. Happy ending. Why did Zohar has to bring that to us. As you remember, this is a way just to give us a push. It's like, don't see the story as it is. So the Zohar continues to explain. First thing is, why when we talk about Sarah, we speak about her death and we speak really about her life. The name of the parasha is not the death of Sarah, but the life of Sarah. Chayei Sarah. And why? Mea Shana, 20 shana, 7 shanim. Why 100 year, 20 year, 7 years? That's not the way you count numbers. It should be 127. years. So the Zohar starts from light, from the light explaining. The Zohar says like this, that's verse 21. Asher hu mi shememaet et atzmo ba'olam hazeh. Praiseworthy is the one that makes himself small in this physical world. How great he is in the eternal world. Mishu katan ba'olam hazeh, whoever is small in this world, hu gadol ba'olam hanitzri, he's big in the real eternal world. What does it mean? We take the word 100, which is big, and we make it small. Year. 20, which is big. Year. You know, the same thing, we give money. So there are hundreds and twenties. That's money. The 7 is change, right? It's not money, it's change. If you have money, no, I just have some change, right? The 7 is years. What does it mean?
בורא שאין הקדוש ברוך הוא מגדיל אלא למקטין את עצמו ואינו מקטין אלא מגדיל את עצמו.
God is making big only the people who make themselves small. You know, but there are people who are small in the physical world and the spiritual world. Simply do nothing. So, what are you talking about? They're not big in any world because they don't want to be big in anything. So we have to understand. First of all, when you talk about this amazing word, which is called ego, what is ego? The way people usually talk about it. The way, you know, you should not have an ego, you should not have an ego, which is nonsense. The Kabbalists are saying, especially the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of the Hasidic movement, without an ego, you go nowhere. Right? Why do you study? You don't understand. And you think if you put some effort, you're going to understand. Without an ego, you never study. Because you say, who am I to understand? I'm nothing, I'm a nobody. How would I? You know, this was written by great sages and I am the small nothing. How would I understand that if you don't have a little ego? To say, I can get it, I will make it, you never learn. Right? You have, all kinds of addictions and all kinds of bad habits and stuff like this. If you don't have an ego, I'm going to become stronger than that. You never overcome that. We're not talking about that ego as a bad thing. We're talking about the ego that stops you from growing. What kind of an ego? This is the ego that, you know, give you an example. You want to make a presentation as a professional. You present, for instance, a big a product. You want, a project that you have to sell and to raise money. You have to present. Now, there are two kinds of presenters. There are the ones that they just, it's all about them. Can they do the job? No, because it's a lot of noise about me. Hi, guys. I'm talking about this product, but you see, it's me. It's me. You see how talented I am? How well do I speak? I look great. I dress up great. I learn how to perform. I'm a performer. And I'm the one who was chosen to present that. You're dismissed. Being great is being able to present the idea or the product or the project without putting yourself in the middle. That makes you a great performer. When you are an actor in a movie, hello, it's me. it's not King Lear. It's me, right? Don't make a mistake. What is ego? You're so busy with yourself. You're so worried about people's recognition because you have such a low self-esteem that you have the need all the time. Hello, it's me. How is that connected to Sarah? Sarah had a life. She really had a life. She really turned around Eve's action. Eve chose to be, it's only about me. Because where was the sin? Not the first bite, we learn in the Zohar, the second one. When it became ta'ava, lust, passion. When she was so eager to get involved with that, that she forgot everything. She forgot the big picture. Sarah is the first person that got back to the big picture. We are here for one purpose, which is to present the light of God wherever we are. When you present the light of God in every action, every movement, every word, every story, just by being there, and that reminds people that you are a presenter, you are just performing your mission. You don't need to look for greatness. Greatness is coming as a byproduct. Sarah did the presentation that was her life. It was never about her. It was always about God. But you know, don't make a mistake. Some people, it's always about God, but it's really about them. Why? When you're with them, you feel pressed, depressed, and oppressed. And you don't feel God at all in the picture. It's them pushing God, their God, into you. No, it's about that you, in the presence of that person, will start experience God. That was Sarah. Because of that, she had a life, because she had she fulfilled the mission that a human being has to fulfill. When you are just wherever you come, people encounter with the light of God. Just a second, when you study Kabbalah, what's the first thing? What's the first thing you have to learn? Everybody wants what? The light of God. Nothing else. If you come and you present the light of God just being there, you don't have to do anything anymore. Just that you just remind the person that that's what he wants. Can you remind me? That's what I want. You just done it. That's what Sarah and Abraham did all their lives. They were just in the search, and the search was so genuine, so authentic. Everybody felt God in their presence. They called them the people of God. Sarah never thought about herself. She thought herself about, how could I be the greatest performer of God's grace on this physical world? And that's why when it says, and the life of Sarah were 100 years, 20 years, 7 years, and then it says, Shnei Chayei Sarah. Shnei Chayei Sarah. You can read it as the years of the life of Sarah, but we said already the years. The word year repeats over here 3 times. No, Shnei is two. The two lives of Sarah. She has a double life. Yes, she was a human being. She got up in the morning. She brushed her teeth properly, whatever, all this stuff. She had a regular life, but everything was imbued with, but I am here to present the real life, God's life. She lived in both universes at the same time. That's why she and her husband were the first chariots. Chariot from the word charrette. Chariot, charrette in French, which means to compose, to put together. What? Divine and mundane. That's what makes you a human being. Getting up in the morning, every animal can get up in the morning.
Every animal does the regular stuff, finding food, feeding the children, some of them don't, whatever, but every animal has its own niche in nature and they do the job. But they're never here to present God's presence. That's our job. And we will never find our calling till we do that. She was the first one to be a living example, a role model for all of mankind. That's why we're reading these parashot. Not because we need to remember history. Because, as we said, every year, a human being is supposed to, theoretically, says the Zohar, to complete all his missions. You didn't. Comes Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, whatever. You have to be cleansed. God cleanses you on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Simchat Torah. And now you have to check, okay, what's my mission for this year? If it's the same old thing, oh my God. It's like you have laundry and you didn't do it. It just stands there. It doesn't just stand there. It starts to rot, get moldy, stink, and stuff like this. So if you're not taking care of your laundry, it's getting worse from one year to another. Okay? What if I finish my laundry? I have to go back to, you know, I have to die. No, don't worry. You get another bucket of laundry, but different laundry, different stuff. It's going to be interesting. Higher level. Don't be worried. Okay? But the year is, you know, Rosh Hashanah is over, the holidays are over, and now we have to reenact the rules. A, if I didn't do the laundry, of course I have to learn the rules, because I didn't, you know, I didn't apply the rules. That's why I didn't take care of my laundry. Correct? Second, if I did get a boost and I change on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, of course I have to reenact the rules, because the way I learned them, I knew it last year, does not apply to this year because I'm different. So we have to reload the basic operational programs. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah, Yosef. This is Genesis. Look, maybe few years ago you won't understand, but today, everybody has some access to the internet. Okay? When you have an access to the internet, just turning on your computer or your phone is not enough. You have to use an app. Now, if you use all of these apps, there's an app, let's say, search. An app for searching, okay? Where is the searching happening? In your phone? In your computer? No, it's happening on the cloud. Your computer, your phone does not have enough memory to deal with all that stuff. When you want to have a social media, where does it all sit? In your phone, in your computer? No, it's in the cloud. Without opening those apps, you're not functioning. Without activating Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rivka, Jacob and Leah and Rachel and Yosef, you're not doing anything. You have to upload those apps every morning, not every year. Every morning. Okay? We said it many times. But the main thing is about that calling. How would you do that? It's bigger than you. So download it to your system by inviting it every morning. By inviting Abraham and Sarah, by inviting, you're not inviting a person. You're inviting, you're not inviting Mark Zuckerberg. You invite a system that is called Facebook, right? If you're using social media or anything else, but you have to bring it in, you have to access that in order to function in different ways, okay? It's enlarging, it makes you bigger. Then access to stuff that you really want to do. Now we have an example. Okay, so let's go back. The Zohar is asking, so, but why is it you know, why 100 shana, 100 year, 20 years, 7 years, why, what these numbers are about? If you know Kabbalah, this is so simple. What's 100?
When you do something, how should you do it? 2 or 10?
Of course 10,
right?
Otherwise, why did you do it? Just to be mediocre, just to do it to get by? That's not a life. But Sarah did not just do it 10. She did it 10 by 10.
What does it mean 10 by 10? Says the Zohar, verse 23.
These life are above. She lived it wholly. All of it.
100 shana keter. Okay. What is 100? 10 by 10. What do I mean 10 by 10?
You have 10 sfirot, but each one of them has 10 sfirot within. The depth, the inner dimension, the fulfillment with light and understanding, being it whole, that's 100, right? When you do something completely, that's 100. How many blows did we have in Rosh Hashanah every day? 100 blows. To cleanse all 100 aspects of the soul. She activated all of them. So what's the 24? Oh, that's simple. Whoever remembers learning about the half a shekel, and then we learned last week, Abraham, he knew that in order to get it all, you need to have a huge desire. And you get the direct light. All 10 sfirot of them. But if that stays this way, you'll go on fire. You'll be fried on the barbecue of life. So what do you have to do? You have to complement, to complete the 10 sfirot of direct light, which means I want, with 10 sfirot of I give. Mm-hmm. You want it 10, you have to give 10. How many together? 20. That's Sarah's 20. Which means she did it all. She took it all, but she made sure that everything she takes, she shares all the way up to 10. Not halfway. Not 2 out of 10. Not 6 out of 10. 10 out of 10. That gives you a gain of 10 out of 10 of the internal light. So in all every revelation, full revelation, how many spheres are involved? 20. 10 I take and 10 I give. You want it 10? You have to give 10. Okay, that's 100 and that's 20. Now for the change. Every person to achieve greatness must live in that scope, that state of mind. It's not easy. Why it's not easy? We're not born like this. It's an acquired thing. You have to purchase this. It's not coming for free. You have to fight all the body distractions. Food, money, sex, sleep, hunger, addictions to that. What people say, society, oh, there's so many of them. So many excuses not to be who you're supposed to be. Why do you have so many excuses? If it was easy, it doesn't worth it. Right? Easy comes, easy goes. We don't appreciate it easy. So we have all of these distractions. That's the change. Do you have money? No, I just have some change. 7 is change. 7 is always the physical world. How many days for creation? 10? No, 7. Right? When a child is born, 7 complete days. On the 8th day, circumcision. People get married. How many blessings? 7 blessings. Somebody passes on. How many days you see Shiva? 7 days. The physical world, that's 7. Manifestation is 7. It's the physical. The physical is only the excuse. She took that also seriously. Right? She did that also seriously. Because she didn't look at making bread as a big, oh, I have to make bread. you know, some people, I have to make money. No, it's all, this is the background story. The real story is, how do I present the 100 sefirot, the 20 sefirot, the 100 sefirot of 10 by 10, the 20 sefirot of 10 in, 10 out? How do I show that while I'm baking bread, while making a living, while I'm raising my kids? So the neighbors look at me and they say, why? There's something so special in your life, I want it too. Not that you go and you just, you know, you have those people that preach and preach and preach and make, and it's all about them. No, that you are just walking the talk and people just feel that without you have to tell them. That's the hardest thing in the world, right? But you want to feel that you had a life, there's only way. Or the other way, oh, we spoke about it. You want like to be like Sodom and Gomorrah? No problem. You'll be fried. Day in, day out. Day in, day out. Then you need antidepressants, then you need a shrink, then you need that, then you need painkillers that you need to get drunk. You need all of that stuff because it's all a cover-up that you are not really doing what you're supposed to do. So when you do it this way, now we're coming to, so what's the story about the burial? Says the Zohar, so now a person lived like this. Sarah is the, this is how it's done. She was the first person who did it right. And we have to follow her. Abraham is just following her. That's why the parasha is after her name, not his. It's not the life of Abraham, it's the life of Sarah. She was the first one to get it. So what's the story about the negotiation? Says, oh, you can read it, you can learn about negotiating, about buying a piece of land. And by the way, how would you know what's right for you? What piece of land? Should you live in Jerusalem? Maybe you should live in Netanya. Maybe you should live in Beit Shemesh. Maybe in Hebron. Maybe somewhere else. Maybe in you know, there's a kibbutz dom, right? Where is my place? When you live like this, you don't have to be worried. How does Abraham find the place? He runs after the calf. He, by the way, finds it. He gets it, he bumps into it. Eliezer, but when you live on that wavelength, you're just there where it's the time and you just, that's a miracle. Because, you know, being married, it's an ongoing miracle, says the, it says everywhere. Two people, two different worlds, being together more than a day or two without killing each other, it's a miracle. It's God's miracle every day. Why? It's not normal. It's not normal. When you're 20, when you're 40, when you're 60, or when you're 70, it's not normal. Sometimes you hear about somebody 85 years old killing his wife or she's killing her husband. God forbid. But that happens. Why? It's not a beautiful thing. It's something that has to be acquired to learn or to be with others and to live with others. To get out of yourself, it's that, and to learn, it's not all about you. Okay? And when it's not all about you, as Rabbi Ezekiel is saying, your spouse will be, if they need to come from across the ocean, they'll come from across, and so, whoops, they will pop up. Where have you been to now? What do you care? I'm here. Right? Let's do it. Okay? Finding a place to live. Finding a life. First of all, get the life of Sarah. Get that life. And be may be your life. Then all the rest will be taken care of. Okay? Now, understanding that, so what's the story about purchasing the land? So this, yes, you purchase the land, you want to purchase something, you have to have a faith. It's also a matter of faith. It will come when it's time and the right thing will be there. Okay? And if not, it will never be the right thing. You live somewhere and you say, I could have been living somewhere else. It's never be enough. You renovate the house once, twice, three times, it's never enough. You know, it's always something is missing. Because it's not about the house, it's not about your wife, it's not about your husband, it's about yourself. Okay? But there's something even deeper than that. Because that's the secret of the 400 shekels. Says the Zohar, there's a deep, you know, in every story in the Torah, there are many, many layers. When the soul leaves the body, after you, the soul has a complete, beautiful life. And the soul leaves the body. It's like, you know, enough is enough. I did my job. I want to go on. I want to move on. And the soul moves on. Then there's a negotiation. Bnei Chet are the entities of the upper world that the soul is negotiating with. Why? Because the soul has to get those lights, says the Zohar, which is an amazing story. and this is the story of that starts, especially in this. Okay, that's in verse 94 in Perusha Sulam of the Zohar on Parashat Chayei Sarah. Rabbi Yossi ben Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi the son of Rabbi Yehuda, haya olech lirot et Rabbi Chiya. That will explain to us also why do we need all of these weird stories about the resurrection of the fish and Jonah and the cow singing psalms, right? And there's one thread with all of these stories. Your logic is not exactly fit for this world. Why? When you learn Kabbalah, that's the second rule. The first rule everybody wants life. The second rule is don't trust your senses and your logic. Because that has nothing to do with reality. Which means reality is much more expanded than what you can even imagine. Just read some books about quantum mechanics, superstring theory, the singular, the theory of singularity, all of that stuff, nothing has to do with logic. You know what? That's reality. Okay? So you have a question, you know, that's not logic, it cannot be. Scientists will tell you, forget, your logic has nothing to do with reality. Okay? Can your logic understand that right now, through your brain, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of radio waves going through? Just cell phones. They're going through your brain. Can you hear them? No. Okay. What about, these are the only wavelengths going through your brain right now? Oh, there's so many of them. We didn't discover all of them yet. Okay. How could they be? But you know what? It's not just in this space, also in that space. How this space for all this in one place? Your brain cannot experience that, cannot understand that. Does that mean it doesn't exist? It does exist. Which means the fact that, you know, we already know, when you have a computer, the computer can understand only according to the programs you download to that computer. Okay? And bigger computers, more sophisticated, can get bigger apps, programming, and they can deal with bigger questions, right? So, we're talking about the question of what's the essence, what's the meaning of life. Can a computer get it? No. Only human heart and mind together, when they are in sync, can get it. And it speaks about it. So it says, the Zohar says, there's a way to understand that story as the issues of the soul. When Abram is representing the soul in our story, Sarah is representing the body in our story, and let's go on. And he says, just to make it short, because it's a big, big story. And he says, when the soul leaves the body, the soul of a tzaddik, what's a tzaddik? Somebody who became a conduit to unite the bliss of the upper world to make it manifest in the physical world. That's a tzaddik. It's a connection between the two worlds, the pipe, the ability to make things flow. That's why the tzaddik is Sfirat Yesod, which is compared to the spine. When your spine is functioning, you have a thought, and that thought immediately could be manifest through your body. Moves, walking, whatever, everything. But if your spine is damaged, God forbid, then you're crippled. You have thoughts and you have the aggravation that it doesn't manifest. Correct? Okay? Tzaddik is the one who connects the real mind, the upper light, the upper world, with the physical world to make it the body to manifest. What did we say is the purpose of creation? Doing good. A tzaddik is someone who is so convinced into doing good, he can make it happen through his action that you see through him the will of God to do good. You see through him the manifestation of all that is good. And you can experience that. So, that is what we're talking about. So, but when the soul of a tzaddik passes on, usually when somebody passes on, he has to pass on. He has somehow, you know, didn't finish the job. You have to finish next lifetime. But the tzaddik that passes on, his body is complete. Everything is open. But he has to go through a process in order to download to the body a special light that will turn the body to become a conduit of light even after the tzaddik passed away. Why do we know have to know that Abraham and Sarah are buried in the cave of Machpelah? Because we can go to Machpelah, we can pray, meditate to go to Machpelah, to connect with Abraham and Sarah, because their bodies are still active. Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rivka, Jacob and Leah, and Rachel. In a way, they died, but they're not calling dead, they're calling Yeshenei Chevron, the sleepers of Chevron. They're just asleep. Which means, Rabbi Zaklo is saying, every great tzaddik, righteous person, or really the one really did it in his life, when he comes to when he passes on, his body is becoming like a power station. You can go and get like how do you call it? You know, sometimes you can get Wi-Fi connection. Over there, it's a USB connection. Going to the grave of a tzaddik. That's why so many people go to Marat HaMachpelah, to Rabbi Shimon in Meon, and stuff like this. Because being there, you can make a connection to that consciousness they created in this physical world. It's becoming a gate. So what happens is over there, that body gets it from the soul. And how does that happen? The body, he says, the body is deserves to a wage of 400 worlds in the Garden of Eden. So, the body is being redeemed by 400 shekel kesef. What is kesef? That's a game of words. Kesef in Hebrew is simply silver. What silver? Grace. Giving. It's a white metal. It's a symbol like water, like the element of water. It's giving. That's why the holy shekel in the temple was only silver, not gold. Only giving. Only silver. Okay? Now, also in Hebrew, you call money silver. Okay? Kesef. But kesef is also a verb. Nichsof nichsafti. It's yearning. is a game. You know, people have passion for money, right? But here we're talking about the discussion between the soul, the body, and the upper world. In order to redeem your body, you need to acquire and redeem yourself by 400 worlds of yearnings, olamot kisufin, which means when a person is eager for the big trophy, which is the connection to the world of the upper world, to spiritual fulfillment, you're redeeming the body from its slavery to ego, stupidity, anger, addictions, all kinds of physical needs and desires. Because the moment you are replacing the physical obsessions to the yearning for the real big stuff of the light, it's like kal vachomer. It's like, if I am so excited about something that is so big, so all the little chain stuff, it's not an issue. When a person redeems himself with its 400 worlds, that's a life journey. To redeem ourselves with that, and it's called the 400 worlds of yearning, of passion, passion for spirituality. When you achieve that, so if somebody insults you, how would you react to them? With compassion. Because, oh, what's happened to him? He's upset. It's never about you anymore. And when somebody is real, not just insulting you, somebody is really trying to make you feel terrible. And you look at them and say, you know, when I got up this morning, I decided today I'm going to feel amazing. So don't feel like to get upset because of you. How can I help you? Right? You know, I'm not going to be upset, so can we do something else? Okay, if we're not going to get upset, we're not going to fight. I'm not going to fight with you. I'm sorry. Why? I don't feel like. I've so much light and passion for light within me. I don't want to be upset. This is where we are supposed to be as human beings. You know what happens when you feel like this a whole day and nothing upsets you because you have bigger things to be excited about? You experience a whole day that you didn't die. For that day, you've been immortal. Nothing killed you. Nothing finished you. Okay? It was an amazing day of immortality. If you repeat that another day, you experience 2 days of immortality. Immortality is not how many years you live. It's how much of that did you experience every day of your life. That's immortality. When you feel like this, you little by little heal your body, heal your relationships, heal the world around you. And that's your calling, all of us. And that's what we are all looking for. We're looking for a world that every person will be immortal. Dying every day, a few times a day, that's not a life. That's a long, painful death. That's not for us. That's not for anyone. And mankind will have to reach that place. We have no choice. Simply, we have no choice. That's our destiny. And we'll be forced to go there. Sooner or later, we don't have so much time left. But that consciousness, we have to give birth to it. That's the consciousness of immortality. Every moment. That's the life of Sarah. Thank you.